Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the weekend edition of the Midland Reporter Telegram, Saturday, April 2nd, 2022. Section A. Dallas Fed. No perfect fix to gas prices, by Mella McEwen. U.S. oil and natural gas producers have been urged to drastically increase production, both to ease supply concerns stemming from the Russian invasion of Ukraine and to help lower energy prices. Discussions around those calls have included disinformation, and analysts of the Federal Bank of Dallas attempted to provide a clearer picture in a community town hall focused on energy and the economy. Michael Plant pointed out U.S. production has grown 4%, and forecasts are for additional 5 to 8% growth this year. One of the major points facing public companies, the guys traded on the stock market, is that investors are protecting their higher returns, and that comes at the expense of higher production growth. Lutz Killian agreed, saying investors are much more opposed to large-scale increases because who knows what oil prices would be in a couple of years. Companies can't afford to go against the wishes of their investors. Plant said, I will also note, as has been mentioned, the industry is running into issues with labor constraints and supply chain bottlenecks, as have other industries. We're seeing modest growth. If companies want to accelerate that growth rapidly in 2022, they'll run into those issues and exasperate the problem. Corporate executives are also thinking about the trade-offs and considering if accelerating growth is worth it. They also are concerned about regulatory environment. A shale well would cost roughly $7 million to drill, he pointed out, and though oil prices are in triple digits, they could fall significantly in the near future, and the oil companies would bear the economic risk, which he said is truly large. He also addressed a criticism that has come from the Biden administration and others that oil and gas operators hold about 9,000 drilling permits yet to be used. It is true there's a large outstanding stockpile of drilling permits. It's not natural to exhaust all permits in a short period of time, just given how the process works. Plant explained the process doesn't take a couple of weeks, but instead could take a couple of years from obtaining the permit to planning the program. The planning process also means permits aren't quickly used. Companies have a portfolio of opportunities, and some permits get used and some won't be used as they're not worth the money. That's also a reason for outstanding permits, he said. And even if activity does increase, he said it will take 6 months in the best of scenarios before that new production shows up. Production from the Gulf of Mexico or Canadian oil sands could take several years. Another proposal to ban exports and keep that production for domestic use would also have unintended consequences. We trade gasoline and diesel on global markets. Having an export ban won't change that fundamental reality, but will introduce distortions. We do produce in the U.S. what's called a sweet crude from the shale areas. Our refineries are not set up to process as much of that sweet crude as we want, so we export a lot of it. A consequence of an export ban would be a lot of that crude would be trapped. That would mean lower oil prices, which would mean less drilling, which would result in less production. That refinery setup is one reason U.S. shale crudes would not be the best substitute for the Russian crude the U.S. has now banned. It's also why the administration is talking with other countries like Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Venezuela, which produce the heavier crudes U.S. refineries are set up to produce. Ultimately, an export ban would not help consumers because less supply would drive up prices, and a price ceiling, as was tried during the oil shocks of the 70s, would have a similar effect because if the cost of producing gasoline exceeds that ceiling, It is not in the refiner's interest to produce as much gasoline as consumers want, which means shortages. A windfall profits tax, which was implemented in the 70s and lasted into the 80s and is being discussed, would make U.S. operators less profitable, disincentivize drilling when oil prices rise, and investors would lose the upside potential for profits when oil prices are high. The industry has had trouble in recent years because they had failed to produce returns for investors. Thus, the demand for capital discipline and returning cash to investors. Again, less drilling activity eventually translates to less production and rising prices. There's no perfect solution for gasoline prices. Unless the shortfall of petroleum exports from Russia can be contained, we're looking at a large and persistent increase in oil prices in order to suppress demand to levels consistent with supply. While he said the U.S. will be impacted because Europe is so much more dependent on Russian petroleum exports, as well as coal from Russia and Ukraine, the impact will be much more substantial. He listed a couple of scenarios that could impact what he called a dismal outlook for energy prices. One is a shock or shocks that could significantly reduce global demand for crude. One such shock is currently taking place in China, which is locking down millions of citizens to combat a fresh COVID outbreak that will not only reduce Chinese demand for crude, but ripple through supply chains and could impact global oil demand, reducing prices. That has already been seen in the recent retreat in oil prices. A second scenario is the strong public support throughout Europe for banning energy imports from Russia, which would make it difficult for European financial institutions to fund those imports. Right now, he said, enough Russian petroleum is making it through, despite sanctions, that significant shortages are being avoided. But if that changes, he said, the economic impact may trigger a response from Russians harmed by the sanctions. Sales see increase, inventory declines. By Stuart Devine. The inventory of available houses is falling in Midland County. The Texas A&M Real Estate Center showed the number of houses available at the end of February and the months of inventory are at their lowest level since the summer of 2019. A Midland market update from Kerry Payne of the agency showed the number of active listings as of March 22nd had dropped to 414. Midland's market is really picking up, Payne wrote. We are starting to see multiple offer situations and homes going over list price once again. We are getting into our hottest months now and expect to see more of this. Payne added, those seeking homes are relocation buyers coming to Midland with ConocoPhillips and Chevron. Now, instead of showing buyers 25 homes, like I did in 2021 when inventory was so high, I'm showing about 10. I express to buyers when they see a home that they are considering placing an offer on, they need to act quickly. Janine Pruitt with the Janine Pruitt team with Pine Beckett reported there were 383 homes for sale last weekend and 434 homes under contract. Pruitt's numbers show a market with lots of buyers. The Texas A&M Center showed the most homes bought in February since it stated keeping track of the month's numbers at 236. Pruitt added that 64% of closed sales were in the $200,000 to $400,000 price range, which has become Midland's version of workforce housing. Pruitt also said her office has seen a large number of first-time home buyers and move-up buyers. I believe the expectation that interest rates were going to go up was a big factor in causing buyers to purchase. This price point continues to be in high demand, and we have seen multiple offers on many properties, especially the updated and well-cared-for homes. Other information from the Midland market show the average home sold through March 22nd fetched a median price of $310,000 and was on the market for 22 days. Payne showed the median price per square foot was $153 in February. It's a great time to sell a home, Buyers still have value on their mind. They want a good location and great condition. Other notables from the Real Estate February report include the average price for the home sold was $333,000. It was the 42nd straight month that the average price for a home sold topped $300,000 in Midland County. The median price for a home sold in February was $312,000. It was the 8th straight month the median price home sold over $300,000. The dollar volume in February was $78.644 million. The 236 homes sold in February marked the second time more than 200 homes were sold inside Midland County during the month. The median price for a home sold in Ector County was $249,100. Oliva returns to hometown with passion for building a better future. Emily Oliva, 31, has been reacquainted herself with the hometown she grew up after working in Louisiana, Mozambique, and New York City. Oliva has realized there's a lot to love and sometimes hate in her hometown that has changed from what she knew. She was born in Midland in 1991 and graduated from Midland High in 2009. She graduated early from Texas Tech University with a political science degree. After college, she moved to Baton Rouge, Louisiana for 2 years to work for an oil and gas company, CB&I, in its legal department. I had a really good boss who said, "I need you to go be something more. You can't just be an admin for the rest of your life." While at a work dinner in Houston, she met the company's country manager for Mozambique. That meeting opened the door for her to work internationally. "He joked with me and asked if I wanted to go to work in Africa," she said. I said, "Sure." Then 2 weeks later, I got a letter that said I was accepted onto the government affairs team for our Mozambique project. There was a lot of culture shock, including the fact that Portuguese is the official language and it is predominantly a Muslim country. But she loved the differences. She worked with the government and local tribes, informing them about the project. Out of precaution due to the political climate, not long after she arrived, the company moved employees back to Houston in 2015. "I studied abroad in Rome during college, and I feel like leaving Midland to experience the world and other cultures is so important for our little bubble out here. I love our bubble, but sometimes we need to see what else is out there." Both those experiences, Mozambique and Rome, have been the biggest life lessons and learning curves for me personally. Not long after returning back to the U.S., she got the chance to work on Hurricane Sandy Relief Project in New York City at the same company. She said the process of providing relief was interesting to witness. The company then went through an acquisition, and the department she worked in was dissolved. "Everything was up in the air again, so I decided to move back to Midland, not planning on staying. I thought I would come back for a month or two and figure out my next move, then leave. She ended up staying in Midland and re-immersing herself into the community. "I left before the boom of 2014, so I left kind of in a bust. It was right after the housing crisis in Midland, smaller and slower. When I came back, the town was booming. Oil was good. People were prospering. There were new restaurants and stores. I was like, what happened to my town? In a good way." Oliva added that Midland as a kid versus Midland as an adult is a weird line to dance across. When we're kids, we think Midland is just a small town. The adults are weird and we want to get out. Now I think Midland has a lot to offer, but it can be very siloed with what it offers, so it's on the individual to figure out where they want to fit in and what they enjoy. It took some time for her to distinguish herself from the 18-year-old she used to be known as and from her parents, Danny and Carla Oliva, who have always been involved in the nonprofit world in Midland. Danny has been the executive director of the Arts Council for Midland for 20 years, and Carly is currently the director of development at American Civil Liberties Union of Texas. I was very much my parents' child still, because when you leave at 18, that's what everybody thinks you are the next time they see you, even though I was 26 when I came back. It's very hard for a 26-year-old to appreciate people asking if I'm Danny's daughter when I'm trying to make a name for myself. She said as soon as she stopped trying to be different, to differentiate herself from her parents, she was able to be different. I felt like I was trying too hard to figure out how to be different. A lot of things I'm passionate about go to the nonprofit side. And when I was trying to find something different, I knew my dad was in the arts nonprofits and my mom was at Basin PBS. So I decided to go into the healthcare nonprofits. She started working at her alma mater, Texas Tech University Center, as a marketing and communications manager. She stayed at that job for more than 2 years. She has now transitioned to the corporate banking world and works for Frost Bank as the community development officer. Midland's nonprofit sector is large and expansive, and there are many nonprofits to choose from when it comes to supporting a certain mission. She said becoming really picky helped her focus on which organizations and groups to put her energy toward. Halava is more than just her job title, too. She is on many committees and boards throughout Midland, from the Sibley Nature Center to the MISD Community Advisory Committee. She's currently involved as a commissioner for the city's Planning and Zoning Commission, board member for League of Women Voters of Midland, board member for United Way of Midland, and Midland Team Court on the MISD Community Advisory Committee, member of Executive Women of Midland, Graduate Leadership Midland, and is currently enrolled in Leadership Texas. Public education has been a big issue for her the last few years. I'm a product of MISD, and so it's one of those issues where if I hear someone slam public education in Midland, it's hard for me to hear. I fully support public education. I think public schools should be beacons in communities. I think we should have the best teachers. I know it's more complicated than that, but the community needs to continue supporting our schools and educators, from the superintendent to the teachers and on to custodial workers. Halava said she has a few mentors in the community who have positively affected her time here. She has known Carmen Bryant since she was 10, and she has grown from someone she admires to a friend and a soul sister in her personal and professional life. Carmen's a confidant I turn to for anything and someone I trust and aspire to be for her authenticity, community involvement, humor, but most importantly, her character. Former City Councilwoman Charlotte Hotchkiss has helped mentor Halava on what her next step is. I've known Charlotte since I was a teenager, and when I moved back, she helped me figure out how to tackle Midland as an adult. Permian Basin Regional President for Frost Bank, Wesley Bounds, has also been a mentor. Wesley's mentorship is a unique example of different generations coming together to solve community problems. I also consider Wesley to be my friend and someone I turn to both professionally and personally when faced with a hurdle. I met him when I moved back to Midland, and he's been a breath of fresh air for me, even though we've been in the community forever. A lot of people think Midland has an identity issue, but Halava thinks differently. I think Midland's identity is a mix of a hometown vibe and the good quirks that come from a big city influence. To come to Midland and appreciate it, people have to know they will experience big artist concerts while also being able to go to Graham's Pharmacy to eat and see your neighbors, people you go to church with, and people you work with. She does think Midland sometimes has an authenticity crisis. Midland is a mover and a shaker, a big business, a small business. What's the next type of place? I think sometimes we lose sight of being our true selves because instead we read rooms and try to socially climb instead of being ourselves, finding our pace and ultimately finding our spot and group that we need. She's witnessed a clash between the new guard and the old guard within Midland. The older generation and younger generation in Midland are kind of at odds with each other right now. There is this very traditional way of doing things which have worked, but now that Midland has changed so much and there are groups like Midland AF that are stirring the pot, it's a change, but a good change. She hopes Midland will continue to open up the old ways to allow new expectations to come in, and that the older generation can reach out to the younger one to help us and merge with how things have been done. Midland's a great place for something new, whether it's a restaurant, business, or an idea. Her advice to other millennials in Midland is to keep pushing buttons, because I even find myself taking the easy road because it's the way it's always been. It's refreshing to kind of ruffle the feathers. Just keep pushing buttons. Keep asking for new things and forge your own path. Permian Drilling is in the midst of a strong rebound, by Mella McEwen. Drilling activity has rebounded to levels seen just before the global pandemic, but growth remains slow, constrained by labor shortages and supply chain bottlenecks on everything from iron and steel to frac sand. Added to those constraints are drillers' continued commitment to return cash to shareholders amid high oil prices. Baker Hughes said Friday the U.S. count rose by 3 to 673, the highest level since March 2020. The number of rigs seeking crude inched up 2 to 533. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas added 1 for 138. Texas led producing states in rig gains. New Mexico remained unchanged. Utah and West Virginia were the other two producing states to see gains, while Louisiana was the only producing state to see a decline. The Permian Basin rig count rose by 4. In Verus, Rig Analytics said the U.S. rig count on March 31st was 757, flat over a week over week prices levels. Activity levels are up 4%. The company said the count was as high as 775 in the last week, which is the same as the week's peak. Month over month, the Permian is up 13 to 299. The Anadarko Basin is down 5 in the last month at 59.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read additional inside stories from the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Saturday, April 2nd, 2022. Former Rockhounds exec to lead Conservancy Board. The Quality of Place Conservancy Board is pleased to announce the hiring of Midland's own Jamie Richardson as its first executive director. "We are so thankful to have Jamie as executive director," said Lori Blong, board member. "Because of his 25 years of leadership with Rockhounds, Jamie brings a wealth of knowledge and practical experience with event planning, facility scheduling, and general management of a sports complex. He is deeply connected to our community, and he shares our vision to inspire civic pride and bring connectivity and usability in our public spaces." In addition to Richardson's experience with the Midland Rockhounds organization, he also brings more than 20 years of direct experience in events and sports, including serving as the leading sales representative for numerous special events, implementing and overseeing events, and making more than 300 community event appearances. His experience providing hands-on financial and organizational management, staffing, and marketing will be an asset to the Quality of Place Conservancy. Richardson's work with Monty Hopple in the development of the Scarborough Sports Complex will be a major asset in completing the Hogan Park Initiative and future conservancy projects. "The slate of executive directors that came from our search committee was incredible," said Quality of Place Conservancy board member Jeff Beard. "This search took a lot of effort from many people, and we are so thankful for those that volunteered their time in this search." Richardson is committed to the Permian Basin and improving the quality of life of Midlanders. "I believe the Hogan Park project and future projects lend themselves to diversifying our community, creating jobs, keeping our citizens here, and attracting new families and businesses," Richardson said. I believe strongly in the importance of tourism and the economic impact tourism brings to a community, and am committed to strengthening recreational opportunities for citizens of the Permian Basin, the youth in our community, and future generations. Richardson is a graduate of the University of Missouri with a degree in broadcast journalism. His passion for the Midland community extends into his personal life as a board member and big brother for Big Brothers Big Sisters, Upward basketball coach, and Operation Christmas Child volunteer. He and his wife, Rosanna, call Midland home and have raised their blended family of five children there. Please help us welcome Jamie at jamie33richos@yahoo.com. To find out more about the project and its status, visit midlandqop.com. West Texas Intermediate Looking Strong After Chaotic March by Mella McEwen. Crude prices closed the books on a tumultuous March as markets were roiled by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Crude futures experienced massive intraday swings, trending in a $37 band during the month. The Biden administration's decision Thursday to release 1 million barrels a day from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve daily over the next 6 months for a record 180 million barrels had the desired effect of cooling crude prices. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange closed below $100 for the first time in several weeks. WTI, which fell 4 of 5 trading days, fell $1.01 or 1% Friday to close at $99.27 and is down $14 from last Friday's close of $113.90 a barrel, the steepest weekly drop since 2011. The posted price ended the week at $95.75, according to Plains All American. Natural gas futures on the NYMEX enjoyed a good week, staying above the $5 barrier all week. Prices got off to a shaky start, falling 7 cents and 25 cents Monday and Tuesday, before climbing 27 cents Wednesday, 4 cents Thursday, and 8 cents Friday, to end the week at $5.72 per MCF, up from $5.51 at Monday's close and $5.57 last Friday. Michael Ostom, president and chief executive officer of Tall City Exploration 3, told the Reporter-Telegram by email the company had decided to increase activity before the run-up in oil prices. Tall City made the decision to ramp up from 1 to 2 drilling rigs in the summer of 2021, and we added a second rig in November, he wrote. Oil was in the 60s and 70s when we made the decision to increase activity. In other words, our activity plan was made prior to the run-up in prices in 2022. We plan to continue at this activity level for the remainder of 2022, adding about 25 more wells to our production base this year. As a result, Tall City will exit 2022 at 20,000 BOEPD compared to 6,000 BOEPD at year-end 2021. He continued, "Please note, and I think this is a key point, increasing drilling activity takes a long period of time. Planning, permitting, and coordinating supplies and services do not occur overnight. They require significant lead time. Secondly, given the current activity levels in the Permian Basin, securing services and supplies to add additional rigs is increasingly difficult. Again, it will take some time for services and supplies to catch up with increasing demand for those services and supplies." Considering the release of oil from the SPR, Westman noted, "As far as the release of oil from the SPR's impact on prices, history tells us that the impact is mild and temporary. This level of SPR release is historic in scale, so perhaps the impact will be more than what we've seen in the past. However, the long-term and more sound solution is to increase production." He wanted to note that Tall City employees and friends donated a little more than $25,000 this week toward relief for Ukrainian refugees. In a town hall discussing energy and the economy, Lutz Killian, senior economic policy advisor with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, said that unless the shortfall of petroleum exports from Russia can be contained, we're looking at a large and persistent increase in oil prices in order to suppress demand to levels consistent with supply. He listed a couple of scenarios that could impact what he called a dismal outlook for energy prices. One is a shock or shocks that could significantly reduce global demand for crude. One such shock is currently taking place in China, which is locking down millions of citizens to combat a fresh COVID-19 outbreak. That will not only reduce Chinese demand for crude, but ripple through supply chains and could impact global oil demand. A second scenario is the strong public support throughout Europe for banning energy imports from Russia, which would make it difficult for European financial institutions to fund those imports. Right now, he said, enough Russian petroleum is making it through, despite sanctions, that significant shortages are being avoided. But if that changes, he said the economic impact may trigger a response from Russians harmed by the sanctions. Edward Moya, senior market analyst, The Americas with OANDA, wrote in his daily newsletter that the knee-jerk sell-off from the SPR announcement of the release of 1 million barrels a day from the SPR over the next 6 months won't have a lasting impact on oil prices. So if geopolitical risks continue to intensify, oil will recover most of this week's losses. Midland Reporter Telegram obituaries published Saturday, April 2nd, 2022. Vivian Gurley Horn Eccles. Vivian Gurley Horn Eccles, lovingly called Gigi by her family, 101 years young, went home to be with her Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, Saturday, March 19th, 2022, in Midland, Texas. A celebration of her life will be held by her family the weekend of April 2nd, 2022. Gigi was born February 26th, 1921, in Harlan, Kentucky, to Richard Arnold Gurley and Lillian Peterson Gurley. She had four siblings: Arnold Gurley, Christine Gurley, Ball Cox, Margaret Gurley, McCurry, and William Billy Gurley, all of whom preceded her in death. Marriages: Thomas Franklin Horn Jr. in 1939, George E. Eccles in 1962. Children: Billy Horn Perkins of Midland, Texas, Thomas R. Horn, deceased, and Larry Joe Horn of El Paso, Texas. Stepson, George Buddy Eccles of Salem, Oregon. Plus numerous grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and two great-great-grandchildren. Memorial donations may be made to Kelview Heights Baptist Church. Cremation arrangements were under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Billy Joe Fagan. Billy Joe Fagan passed away Saturday, March 26, 2022, in Midland, Texas. Born April 6, 1935, to Dolly and Ray Fagan of Muleshoe, Texas. In high school, he met his lifelong love, Bonnie Adams. He and Bonnie married May 9, 1954. Joe is survived by his wife, Bonnie, son, Mike, and wife, Stephanie, daughter, Sharla Sirigo, and husband, Victor, daughter, Cheryl Starnes, and husband, Glenn, son, Donnie, and wife, Kendra, plus grandchildren. He's also survived by his brothers, Jimmy Don Fagan and Carol Fagan, and his sister, Sandra Hickson. Visitation will be April 5th from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. A memorial for Joe will be held April 6th at 11 a.m. at Crestview Baptist Church in Midland. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Navy SEAL Foundation, 1619 D Street, Virginia Beach, Virginia, 23459. Or Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Arrangements under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Curtis Wayne Clark. Curtis Wayne Clark, always known as Wayne Clark, passed away peacefully in his sleep at the age of 92 on the morning of March 21st, 2022, at Silver Wings Assisted Living on the west side of Albuquerque. He is survived by his son, Michael W. Clark, and wife, Mikey, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Son, Russell D. Clark, Albuquerque, New Mexico, and daughter, Terry L. Simmons, Midland, and eight grandchildren, nine great-grandchildren, and one great-great-grandchild. He was married to Mary F. Stevenson. They later moved to Gardendale, Texas. He remained living there for several years after his wife Mary passed away in March of 2004. Janie Decker Wallace. Janie Decker Wallace passed away in Midland March 30th, 2022. She was born September 4th, 1926 in Fort Worth, Texas, to Mary Neely and Westbrook B. Decker. She married Bruce Wallace June 19, 1948, and spent the next three decades traveling the world as a military officer's wife and mother to three children. He preceded her in death in 2006. She is survived by daughter Sharon and husband Joel McMains of Fort Worth, son Steve Wallace of Midland, and daughter Valerie and husband Alan Hale of Midland, and her beloved grandchildren. There will be a Christian graveside service and burial in Santa Ana, Texas, at a future date. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests a memorial in Janie's name to one of the following: Hillcrest School, 2800 North A Street, Midland, Texas, 79705. Kinder Frog School, 2805 Stadium Drive, TCU, Box 297415, Fort Worth, Texas, 76129. Or The Village at Manor Park, 2208 North Loop 250 West, Midland, Texas, 79707. Arrangements under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Condolences may be made at npwelch.com. John E. Meyer. John Edward Meyer passed away March 25th, 2022. John was born on September 9th, 1940, in Wichita, Kansas. John was preceded in death by his parents, Louise Bogman Meyer, Robert F. Meyer, and his wife, Mary Ann McCray. John and Mary Ann married August 8, 2000, in Scotland. John is survived by his stepson, Thomas McRae Sloan, and his wife, Shirley, of Midland, and Katie Goggins and her husband, Chris, of Gun Barrel City. John had six step-grandchildren. John also had nine great-grandchildren. There will be a funeral service held Saturday, April 2nd at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church, 1412 West Illinois Avenue, Midland, 79701. In lieu of flowers, the family does ask, please, if you're able, to make a donation to High Sky Wing of the Commemorative Air Force or Lone Star Sanctuary for Animals. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at ellisfunerals.com for the Meyer family. Nirajan Kumar Sharma. Nirajan K. Sharma passed away February 3, 2022, in Cedar Park, Texas. Born April 21, 1941, in Kathmandu, Nepal, to Rohini and Shanta Satyal, he was the oldest of seven children. In addition to all of his community families, Niharan Sharma is survived by his wife of 55 years, Karen Sharman. He is also survived by his brothers and their wives, Pramod and Renu Sharma, Ajaya and Nana Satyal, Jaya and Mala Satyal of Florida, and Bihaya and Asha Satyal, and sisters Anjali Sharma and Tara Sharma of Kathmandu, Nepal. His daughters and their husbands, Neera and Jerry Greer of Midland, and Nisa Sharma and Joe Porter of Cedar Park, plus grandchildren. He is also survived by six great-grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his father, Rohini Satyal, and mother, Shanta Satyal. A celebration of Niharan Sharma's life will happen on April 9th in Midland. Services will be held at 10 a.m. at Ellis Funeral Home, 801 Andrews Highway, followed by interment at 11 a.m., Rest Haven Memorial Park, also in Midland. In lieu of flowers, please consider a gift in his name. Sharma's favorite charities benefited the youth of the world. Two of these are Save the Children Nepal, Mana Worldwide. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at CookWaldenChapelOfTheHills.com for the Sharma family.
This is Jane reading for the Odessa American, Saturday, April 2nd. Odessa College's continuing education programs are growing and expanding with a wide variety of opportunities. Heather Patton, Health Career Director at OC, said one of the popular programs is medical assisting, which has gone from one to three cohorts a year. Medical assistants are the people you see first at a clinic, Patton said. They're the ones who are going to check you in, take your copay, height, weight, vitals, and then they help schedule your prescriptions and your follow-up visits. Sometimes they will ask you what you are at the doctor's office for, and they'll relay it to the doctor. Patton says she is trying to offer more on-ramps for students to take advantage of the health programs and remove barriers by having classes that start at multiple times of the year rather than just twice. We usually have classes that start in August and January. I've created on-ramps in October and in March now so that people who maybe didn't get it right in August or the January mark can now get it at the October or the March mark. We're also dividing it up between Odessa and our extension sites, she said. Depending on enrollment, some of the extension sites may offer classes on a hybrid basis. Eventually, they will have to attend class labs in person, depending on the program. Patton said there are skills labs at the extension sites. In the summer, accelerated phlebotomy and CNA courses will be offered. Both are 8 weeks long. We have a lot of demand for that, and people know that we offer it during the summer, so they don't have 16 weeks to take a class. They know that we're doing an accelerated one, and for 8 weeks, they can get it done. We're compressing and condensing it down, Patton said. In phlebotomy, they can work in many areas of a hospital or lab. It is recommended that students take a national certification exam because it makes them more marketable. Also, because of strong demand, Patton said a pharmacy technician class started in March and classes in Andrews and Pecos will go through July 7th. Patton said pharmacy technicians learn how to read prescriptions, how to dosage calculations for prescriptions, and the way to tell a generic from a brand name, among other skills. We're adding the trainee license to it now. They can get a job immediately when they start the program, Patton added. In Texas, they can hire you in a pharmacy and you learn on the job. You still have to apply with your trainee license, but you have 2 years to take your PTCB, which is the pharmacy technician certification in Texas. This way, they're going to be doing it concurrently. So instead of having a formal externship, they will have the ability to work on the job while they're going to school, Patton said. She added that everyone needs pharmacists, CVS, Walgreens, United Supermarkets, and hospitals. Everyone other than the pharmacist is usually a pharmacy tech, she said. They can do everything except offer advice. They can fill all the prescriptions and then do the pharmacist's job is that they go back and do the verification. And then they're the ones who do the counseling because they're the doctor. Patton also is starting a patient care tech program, which runs 16 weeks. Patient care technicians have to take an exam to be nationally certified, so they can go anywhere in the U.S. They can work in hospitals and urgent care clinics, for example. The popular massage internship appointments will be available June 13th through July 21st. One-hour sessions are $20. Call 432-335-6580 for availability. Patton noted that there are scholarships and grants available. If they're ready to start a new career, Odessa College is the place to be, Patton said. They can also visit odessa.edu. Luis Gonzalez, Associate Dean of Continuing Education, said they have a 5-week truck driving program. This semester, they have launched a training program in February in Pecos. Gonzalez said the city of Pecos put a couple of its employees in the program, and they want to continue offering that. They trained city employees in Andrews as well. It ran for 9 weeks as opposed to 5. But now, Gonzalez said they are trying to find adjunct instructors to teach there. They were able to hire an adjunct in Pecos. Gonzalez said the federal government made a change in February. Now a student who goes to the Texas Department of Public Safety for a commercial driver's license must have gone to a school that is listed on the federal register. He added that OC is looking at ways to expand trucking locally so they could offer night or maybe weekend classes, which could almost double their capacity in terms of students served. Christy Pruitt, Business and Industry Sales Coordinator, said they are partnering with BAM Consulting to offer an entrepreneurial certification program. This is Jane reading for the Odessa American on Saturday, April the 2nd. Odessan gets 65 years in murder. An Odessa man convicted Thursday of murdering another local man 4 years ago will likely die in prison after being sentenced by an Ector County jury on Friday. The jury deliberated 90 minutes before sentencing Rondell Jared Ferris, 41, to 65 years in prison for murder in the July 2018 death of Tregonell White, 41. They also sentenced him to concurrent terms of 50 years for felony murder and 20 years for engaging in organized crime. According to court testimony, two relatives of Ferris's got into a fight with White and his brother, Roderick White, outside a convenience store at Highway 80 and 8th Street, and Ferris ran out of the store and shot Tregonell White. Before visiting, Judge Rodney Satterwhite imposed the sentences he heard from Roderick White, White's mother, Glenda Clay, and his aunt, Sandra White Thomas. Roderick White told the judge he'll never forget his little brother, the comic book of his life. He said they had been raised to always have each other's backs, and he'll always remember that in the last moments of Tregonell's life. That's what they were doing. Clay told Ferris she misses her son's smiles, hugs, joys, and the pranks he played on her. I'll never forgive you for taking my son from me. Never, Clay said. Thomas questioned how many of God's children are going to continue dying in the world because of gun violence. She told Ferris he broke her heart and lamented the fact White left behind children and grandchildren that will never get to know him. "I ask God to help you get the hate out of your heart," Thomas said. "I'm going to write you and tell you that I forgive you, but right now I just can't. God bless you." Taking the stand again after Clay stepped down, Thomas said she doesn't know what happened to Ferris as a child, but she prays he'll get it right. Ferris was facing 15 to 99 years of life on each of the three charges. His attorney, Jeff Nicholson of Lubbock, asked for mercy for his client, saying people can be rehabilitated. He also noticed his client was respectful throughout the entire trial. Assistant Ector County District Attorney Melissa Williams asked the jury for life sentences, noting Ferris was placed on probation in drug and weapons cases in 2011, violated his probation in another weapons case, and was sent to prison. Ferris executed White over a fight that didn't even involve him, and he didn't just endanger White's life, but the lives of everyone else in the parking lot that night, Williams said. "I hope you don't feel you have to give him extra credit for being in the courtroom," she said. She asked the jurors to ask themselves, "Will you feel safe ever knowing he's out there?" Williams and her co-counsel, Scott Turner, based their case on the testimony of Thurman Williams, who came forward more than 3 years ago after the shooting to say he saw Ferris shoot the victim, and surveillance tapes that showed White dropping to the ground seconds after Ferris exited the store and shots are heard ringing out. They also relied heavily on the testimony of a deputy medical examiner who testified the three shots that struck White were fired less than 3 to 4 feet away based upon the soot and gunpowder left on his face. At least one of the shots was fired from less than 12 inches away, she said.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with another inside story from the Odessa American, published Saturday, April 2nd, 2022. Local news roundup. Police make arrest in shots fired incident. The Odessa Police Department has arrested one person on a charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon in connection with the call of shots fired March 28th. Fernando Baeza, 22, was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a news release stated. The shots were reportedly fired March 28th in the area of Ada Street and Hickory Avenue. The initial investigation determined that several juveniles and an adult gathered in the area and were involved in a verbal disturbance when the situation escalated to shots being fired, a news release stated. Subjects fled the scene and some went to a nearby school, Ector College Prep, to summon police. There were no reported injuries, the release stated. Anyone with information concerning this incident is encouraged to call Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS. The investigation continues. DPS identifies woman who died in four-vehicle collision. A 23-year-old Odessa woman died after she was the passenger involved in a four-vehicle collision. The reported fatal collision happened at 2:21 a.m. February 6th on Farm to Market Road 2020, about 6 miles west of Odessa, a Texas Department of Public Safety press release stated. Troopers say the investigation showed 24-year-old Alan Valenzuela of Odessa was the driver of the 2021 GMC Acadia, while 23-year-old Odessan Amari Flores was the passenger. It was determined that a 2014 Honda CR-V was traveling eastbound on Farm to Market Road 2020, with the Acadia traveling behind the CR-V when the Acadia failed to control speed and collided with the CR-V's rear. The Acadia then traveled across the center median into the westbound lanes and collided head-on with a 2015 Chevrolet Tahoe which was traveling westbound in the inside lane, the press release stated. A 2019 GMC Acadia, which was traveling westbound, then struck the 2021 Acadia. This investigation continues. Man dies in connection to pedestrian vehicle collision. A 61-year-old man from Rio Grande City died after he was struck by a vehicle that was attempting to avoid a previous wreck. The reported incident happened at 6:17 a.m. March 31st near the intersection of North Moss Avenue and 3rd Street, a Department of Public Safety press release stated. Troopers say Darren Lee Cody, 51, of Odessa, was driving a 2019 Dodge Ram with passenger 19-year-old William Lee Cody of Odessa going southbound on Moss Avenue. Investigation showed the pedestrian, identified as 61-year-old Valdemar Zurita of Rio Grande City, was involved in a non-related collision, according to the press release. After this collision happened, the Ram was traveling south on Moss Avenue when the pedestrian walked into the southbound lanes. Troopers say the Ram struck Zurita as the Ram attempted to avoid colliding with a wrecked vehicle from the previous collision. Zurita was pronounced dead by Odessa Fire Rescue. Lockdown at Bowie MS for airsoft gun. Bowie Middle School was planning a lockdown drill this morning, but before the drill occurred, school leaders received reports about a student telling others he brought a gun with him to school. Some told school leaders it was an airsoft gun. Others said it was not an airsoft gun. School leaders called for the lockdown earlier than planned in order to sort through the conflicting reports from students. It was an airsoft gun, and the student faces school discipline as well as a Class A misdemeanor criminal charge of use or threat of gun on campus. ECISD leaders want to thank those students who made the reports at the school and ECISD police and school staff for quickly responding to keep everyone safe. City to begin angled parking next week. Beginning the week of April 4th, the city of Odessa will begin work to change all parallel parking to angled parking. The following areas that will be changed are 4th Street from North Lee Avenue to North Texas Avenue and 5th Street from North Lee Avenue to North Texas Avenue. Only one side of the street will be closed at a time. These changes will result in more than 30 additional parking spots downtown. If you have questions or concerns, please call the Downtown Odessa Incorporated offices at 432-335-4682.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.